I wanted to come up today to give a talk because it's been a while since both the Venerable and I have given a talk. We've had a number of events here at the temple, and so I told the Venerable this week that, you know what, I'd like to give a talk on a topic that I feel is very relevant for everyone, because fear is an emotion that we all feel. And there are many different types of fear. And so, to make things a bit interesting, I thought I'd try something new today. Since I'm giving a talk about fear, why don't I take advantage of this opportunity to address one of my biggest fears? Ever since I was young, I've always had a great fear of speaking in public, of being in front of a large audience. And I felt that growing up was one of my biggest weaknesses. You know, I could take exams without any problems. I could do well in school without any problems. But when it came to coming up in front of a large audience, that was always a big challenge for me. And up until the end of college, when I started to come back to the temple to work, that was when I started really working on overcoming this fear of mine, this fear of being in front of a lot of people and giving a talk. Not to mention talk, before even giving announcements, would make me cringe. It would make me shudder with fear. But today, I'd like to try something new. Normally, when I give talks, everything is quite structured. I spend a lot of time to prepare for my talks. I usually have a PowerPoint presentation, or I have notes in front of me. And one of my other big fears is coming out to speak in front of a large audience and not really knowing what I'm going to say. Coming out in front of everyone without really preparing a proper lecture. I don't have any notes in front of me today. The only thing, you know, that's here is just me and you. There's no notes in between us. I thought it would be a great opportunity to try this out, you know, try to overcome this fear of not feeling that I'm prepared enough. Because growing up, I was always led to believe that you had to prepare for everything. When I was in university, I took a negotiations course. And in that course, the professor told all of us, in negotiations, one of the most important, one of the key factors to negotiating well is proper preparation. If you don't prepare, you're preparing yourself to fail. That's what he said. And that helped me for most of my college years. I always spent a lot of time preparing and I would do quite well. But I would still retain that fear within me. You know, what if I didn't prepare? Would I do the same? How can I overcome this fear that's still latent within me? So instead of preparing so that I don't have to prepare to fail, I am prepared to fail today. Because by preparing to fail, I will overcome this fear. And so I would like to talk about this subject of fear that all of us feel. In Buddhism, the practice of the Buddha's teachings helps you to overcome fear. I'm sure many of you noticed there are many different forms of the statue of a Buddha. And the Buddha has many different gestures. The Buddha statue that we have behind us, the one in the middle of Sakyamuni Buddha, and his two hands are placed just above his legs in this particular gesture. In Southeast Asia and in other parts of Eastern Asia, like China, you might have noticed that the Buddha statue has this gesture. What does this gesture mean? If a Buddha has this gesture with his hand, one hand above, one hand below. Now, this gesture is not meant to stop traffic. What this gesture is meant to be is to represent fearlessness. So Buddha was the perfect embodiment of fearlessness. We call this the Abhaya Mudra. And throughout his teachings, the Buddha would expound on what the nature of fear is. Why do we have this emotion? How do we go about overcoming it? And in his teachings, he addresses this question of overcoming fear indirectly through a myriad of his teachings on impermanence, non-self, and suffering. Franklin D. Roosevelt, in one of his addresses, he had a famous saying, and that famous saying was, "The only thing we should fear is fear itself." Now, I think if we look at it from the Buddha's perspective, a better way of rephrasing that is, the only thing we should fear is not understanding fear. Because when you come to think of it, fear does not necessarily have to be bad. Fear is not necessarily a bad emotion. And why is that? Because there is fear that can lead you to do positive things. Fear of wrongdoing. Fear of doing things that cause other people suffering. Fear of doing things that lead to very negative karmic retributions. That's fear, isn't it? So fear is not necessarily something that we should fear, but it's something that we should understand. And the whole point of the Buddha's teachings is to make us understand these things, understand the true nature of reality. If we understand the true nature of reality, then a lot of our problems will go away. And we won't be feeling the suffering and unhappiness that we feel in our lives. So how did the Buddha try to make us understand fear? Well, we have to first understand what the nature of fear is. Why is it that we feel fear? In my personal opinion, I think that fear is in large part because of our attachment. All of us have attachments. That's why we're here. We're attached to the self. We have this very strong notion of an ego, of a me, of a self. And we cling on to this without ever letting it go. And really, it's this strong notion of a me, of a self, and this clinging towards it that leads to all of our sufferings, that leads to all the negative emotions that we feel, like fear, like anger, like greed, like jealousy, like doubt, like suspicion. But the Buddha told us that this notion of self is merely a fabrication of the mind. That there really is no self. But we've superimposed this concept of a self into our existence And that's why we're suffering. So the Buddha told us that there is no self. There should be no difference between self and other. They are one and of the same. But unfortunately, all of us, we've become deluded. And because of that, it leads to a lot of our suffering. And so really, the first step in overcoming fear is to understand that we have a wrong perception of this world. It's the wrong perception that leads to our suffering. We have the perception that everything is separate, that I'm separate from you, that this belongs to me, that belongs to you. But when you come to think of it, all of us are related. I'm the continuation of my parents, my mother and father, all my ancestors. They're in me, and I'm also in them. The same goes for your children. Your children are in you, and you're in them. There should be no difference. It's not that hard to see that connection because you're related to them by blood. But you can see the connection if you look more deeply between you and everyone else as well. All of us are made of the same things. We're made of the four elements. In Buddhism, in Buddhist cosmology, the Buddha tells us that all matter is made up of the four elements: water, earth, fire, and wind. All of us share these elements. And we share these elements with everything in the world. We rely on the elements to exist. Without the elements being there, we wouldn't be there. Our body is made up of 70% water. The world is also made up of 70% water. We're a product of the world. While we're on the topic of water, maybe I can sidetrack a little bit. Water actually has memory. The atomic structure of water is H2O. That doesn't change. But the molecular structure can change. So if we give positive emotions to water, the water remembers it. If we give it negative emotions, it also remembers it. But people in the East, they knew this centuries and centuries ago. When we conduct blessing ceremonies and we put the water in front of us and we say our prayers towards it, it's not just meant symbolically. It's not just done for its symbolic value. But actually, when you say your prayer and you build up all this positive energy, that positive energy carries through into that water. And that water has a way of remembering it. So that's why they say the water that you drink, the water that comes straight from your tap, you shouldn't drink it right away. Because what happens is that water has been forced through your pipes and has gone through many different twists and turns. It's been forced out. And when it arrives in your cup, the molecular structure has been disturbed. And if you drink that water, scientists have shown that there are poisonous and toxic elements in there. You have to let that water sit for a while before it's safe to drink. Obviously, this is at the very minute microscopic level, and so it's not real poison, but over time, it can become poison. That's why we have different sicknesses, different illnesses. And so we can see that everything is related. We give off energy to the water. The water gives us the nutrients to survive. All of us here are related. All of us here are sending energy to each and every one of us at every moment. The person that you're sitting next to right now is sending off heat in your direction, and your body is absorbing that heat. That's the element of fire. The heat that that person is giving you is also your heat. What I'm saying right now, the sound waves that are traveling out towards you, it's entering into your body. It's permeating your body. And it's not just the waves, but it's also the teachings. What I'm saying today, you know, the talk that I'm giving, the concepts that I'm talking about, the teachings that I'm bringing up for discussion, this is not something that is original or is something that belongs to me. It belongs to every single one of my teachers, everyone I've listened to in the past, books I've read, my upbringing, my education, people I've associated with. All those conditions have come together to form the opinions I have on certain things. So really, the opinions do not belong to you. Everyone thinks that, oh, this is my opinion, this is his opinion. No, that opinion does not belong to anyone. That opinion comes together just because of how you've been conditioned. So that's why all of us are related. There's no difference between one person and the other. And so if we want to understand how to overcome fear, then we have to first understand that there should be no barrier between you and the other person. Because fear is in large part due to the separation that you feel between you and other people. In fact, I would say that the amount of fear that you feel is directly proportional to the degree of separateness you feel from the other person, from the people that are in your life. And it's this attachment to the self. When you attach to the self, you become very possessive. You like to acquire things. And when you acquire things, you want to keep them. You're scared of losing them. And that gives rise to that fear again, that fear of losing things. It's because you see that thing as being yours. But you don't see that that thing is actually not yours. You think this body is yours. No, it's not yours. If it was yours, wouldn't you be able to control it? If it was yours, and if you really had this body that belonged to you, that you could control it. You could tell it not to be sick. You could tell it not to get old. But can you do that? No, you can't do that. So this body is not really yours. This body comes together because of certain conditions that have come together to make it happen. And there's nothing we can do to prevent it from getting old. There's nothing we can do to prevent it from dying. It follows its natural course. And so when people have a fear of death or fear of getting sickness, it's because they don't have an understanding, a proper understanding of what the true nature of reality is. They don't understand that this body is not actually yours. But they see it as being theirs. That's why they suffer. That's why they're scared of losing it. That's why they have this fear of dying, of getting sick. But if you just see that it's a natural process, It's a process beyond your control, that you don't have to be fearful of it anymore. Now, there are many different types of fear, and all fear comes from the same origin. It comes from attachment to the self. But depending on what fear it is, there might actually be different ways of dealing with it, different ways of looking at it. So some of the most common fears, fear of sickness, fear of death. That's probably one of the biggest fears we all have. Fear of sickness, fear of pain. What makes us fearful is we don't like to suffer. And we feel that if we get an illness or if we get hurt, then that pain is really making us suffer. But really, when you come to look at it, there is pain there. But a lot of the suffering that we give ourselves is what we add on top of the pain that we experience. Because a lot of the pain that we experience is very short-term in nature. But it's the fear and it's the anxiety that we place in between, that we add on top of that pain, that really makes us suffer a lot. So in one of my talks a while back on mindfulness, I talked about when we practice mindfulness, what are we focusing on? Are we focusing on the subject, which is us? Are we focusing on the object, which could be anything? It could be your breath, it could be the Buddha, it could be a candle flame. Is that what we focus on? If you look deeply, that's not what you should be focusing on. What you should be focusing on is what's in between you and that object. Are you placing desire, hatred, fear, anxiety in that space between you and the object? So really, it's the same with pain. What are you placing in between you and that chemotherapy process that you're going through right now? What are you placing between you and that feeling of pain in your body? Are you putting in resistance in that space? Are you putting in fear and anxiety? That's what's causing you to suffer, not the pain. The pain is very short term. I'm sure all of you would remember when you were children and you know, your baby teeth would fall out. Sometimes, you know, it would get very wiggly, and it wouldn't get to the point where it's coming out yet, but it's very irritating, and so you want to try to pull it out. You try to pull out that tooth. Now, just think about all the fear and anxiety you felt when your mom or your dad would tie a floss around that tooth before they pulled it out. Just think about that. Just think about the fear and anxiety you felt, how uneasy you felt, how much suffering it was. There wasn't any pain there yet because they haven't pulled it out. You were suffering because of the fear that you placed in between you and that tooth. And when that tooth was pulled out, let me ask you, did it really hurt? How long did the pain last? A few seconds at most? But the half an hour, the hour before getting ready to pull that tooth, that was where all the suffering was. Not in the actual pulling of the tooth. So we can see that we do that to ourselves. We don't need to do that. It's unnecessary. The pain does not last that long. It's just momentary. But we suffer because of all the fear and anxiety that we place in between us and that object. That's why meditation is so important, because it focuses on making us mindful of staying grounded in the present, being aware of what you're putting in between you and that object. So that instead of putting in fear and anxiety, you can replace that with other emotions, positive emotions, emotions of understanding, of compassion, of joy. What about fear of death? Everyone has to face death. It's unavoidable. So how do we deal with that fear? Well, I think a lot of the fear that comes up is because we don't know what's going to happen after we die. We think we're going to become nothing. That's what a lot of people think, especially people who haven't been educated in the Buddhist philosophy and teachings. They think that after they die, they become nothing. People who don't have any religious belief, don't have any particular religious faith that they uphold, there's no concept of heaven. There's just a belief that after they die, they become nothing. And that's the cause of so much fear. But really, do we become nothing? When we go out into the garden and we see above us in the sky, there are clouds. When the clouds disappear, does that mean that the clouds die and they go into nothingness? No. The clouds merely change their form. They become rain or snow. But we don't see that. All we see is the cloud disappearing. The cloud has not died. It's just changed into a different form. We know that energy cannot be destroyed. We know that from the law of the conservation of energy. It's a proven law. Energy can only be transformed. And we know that energy and matter are interchangeable. Energy is matter, matter is energy. E equals mc squared. So when we die, we don't become nothing. All we do is we merely change form. When we go out, right now it's autumn, the leaves are falling. When the leaves fall to the ground, do the leaves die? They don't die. They appear dead to you. But what happens is over time, those leaves, they fall back into the soil under the tree. And it becomes the nutrients that the tree needs to grow new leaves in the spring. So that leaf that fell and looked like it was dead never died. It just changed form and it became the new leaf of the spring. We're composed of all of these elements. How are we any different? When this body dies, it's not the end of us. It's the end of this body. But we just take another form. We take a form based on our karma, on the actions, the thoughts, the speech that we've committed in this life and in our previous lives. That's the only thing that's carried. And that determines what form we will take in the future. So, people who have fear of death have it because they don't really understand the true nature of reality. and they're still very attached to this concept of self. They haven't let it go yet. That's why when they die, they don't want to let go of this body. They're so attached to it because they're so habitually used to serving this body and attaching to it, feeding it with good food, clothing it with expensive clothing. That's also why people look for partners, because they believe that finding a partner can make them feel important. It makes them feel valued. Otherwise, they would feel very alone. But really, you're not alone, because you're no different from everyone else. We're all connected. That's why we have some people who also have a fear of loneliness. They have a fear of not having anyone there to take care of them. And so that's why they look for partners, that's why they look for someone to take care of them. But it doesn't really always work out the way they intended. It can lead to separation, it can lead to divorce. And when you get older, how can you be so sure that even your partner will take care of you? Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll leave you. In fact, I would say, if you're old and you're sick, you shouldn't think about relying on a partner. We're so fortunate in British Columbia to have such great healthcare services. If you're old and you need help, you can call for assisted living, for senior care. And you can have a nurse come to your home to take care of you. They'll bathe you, they'll cook meals for you, they'll do everything for you. It's even better than having a wife, because who knows, your wife might leave before you, or your husband might leave before you. And so this feeling of loneliness that we feel, separateness from other people, it's because we don't have this proper understanding. We don't understand the nature of who we are. And that's why we feel fear. And what about another fear? A fear that's especially common in the developed world, I feel, is the fear of failure. And again, this is a fear that is there within us because of the strong attachment that we have. We have an image of ourselves in our minds, or we have an image of who we want to be, and we identify with it. So whenever we're faced with a situation where that image is being threatened, or that image is at risk of being diminished in any way, then that's when we feel fear. Because we don't want to look bad in front of other people. We have a very clear image of how we should be. And when we're in situations where that image is at risk of being diminished in any way, then we give rise to a lot of fear. I've come to think of fear of failure in a different way now. I like to ask the question to myself. When I have this fear of failure, it's obviously arising because of this attachment to the ego. So I should ask myself, you know, if I'm about to take an exam, I have exam fear. Or if I'm about to come up and give a talk and I have fear and anxiety of getting up in front of the public to talk, I should tell myself, am I trying to learn something or am I trying to prove something? Because if you're trying to learn something, then there should be no concept of failure or success. Because if anything, failures will only help you. Thomas Edison, I'm sure all of you have heard of him. He invented the light bulb. How many times did Thomas Edison fail? He failed 1,000 times. On the 1,001st attempt, he discovered the light bulb. When he was in school, when he was young, his teachers would tell him he would be too stupid to learn anything. That obviously wasn't the case, was it? So when you approach fear of failure from the perspective of, am I trying to learn something or am I trying to prove something? If I'm trying to learn something, there should be no concept of failure success. In fact, failure, I think, will help you even more than success. Because with success, you build arrogance. With success, you get conceited. You don't want to improve anymore. But with failure, that's what motivates you to do better. And so when you have that concept in your mind, then when you are about to enter into an exam room to take an exam, or when you come up to speak in front of the public, really, if you're just starting out, you want to fail. Because failing will motivate you to do better next time. And over time, you will be able to reach success. Doing well in your exam or giving a good talk, that's just the coming together of conditions. It has nothing to do with whether you're useful or not. Just because you fail doesn't mean you're worthless, doesn't mean you don't have any value. Because when you think that way, that means you're thinking from the perspective of a self. But whether or not you fail or succeed, really that has no existential relevance. That only has social relevance. Relevance at the conventional level. So that's why you should see it as, okay, I failed this time, but that's okay. That's just because the causes and conditions weren't there to make it happen. But that doesn't say anything about me. That doesn't say anything about a self, because it doesn't mean I'm worthless, doesn't mean I'm good for nothing. Because there is no self to begin with. So it's the wrong way of thinking that leads to this fear and suffering that you experience. So the bell has gone, and we should probably be heading into the cafeteria for lunch now. If any of you have any questions on fear or would like to share your own experiences with fear, you can bring it up for discussion. You can bring it for discussion now or after lunch, but I hope that everyone here today will start to think more about fear and about the types of fear that you deal with. Everyone deals with different types of fear, some more strongly than others. And we should know that fear comes from attachment. And the only way to really overcome fear is to lose this attachment, to lose this attachment to the self. You can overcome different types of fear through various methods. For example, if you have a fear of public speaking, you can get over that fear of speaking in public by practicing a lot, by getting experience speaking in front of many people. If you if you touch that fear and if you embrace it long enough, then you won't be scared of it. So there are ways to deal with different types of fears, worldly ways to deal with different types of fears. Usually experience and practice will help you overcome that fear. But if you really want to completely and holistically overcome all fear, then that comes from overcoming your attachment to the self. Dissolving this false notion of self that you've created. And so that's why the Buddha was the perfect embodiment of fearlessness. Because he overcame all of these things. He overcame this notion of self. And by overcoming it, he reached a state of fearlessness.